It's Dieter and Jake, and we're here on a Tuesday. Brian Schneider, special teams coordinator for the 49ers, is not here.
Oh, that's That was poor timing. I was raising the roof. That's
dude. You got to stop. The amount of times you hit your microphone, you should know by now. Keep the hands low. Do something below the camera that can get you fired from CNN, you know?
Again, I'm doing the raise the roof. That is not my reaction to Brian Schneider being fired. I'm sorry. Just so excited to be here.
Yeah. Welcome to draft season, where we, in fact, are not staying up until 2 o'clock Eastern time in order to do live shows for the most degenerate of sickos, which we deeply appreciate. Presumably, most of you all see this.
It's good to know that you're that there's some of you here in
it's
the.
It's good
afternoon.
To know there's
four. It's four, five.
Hey, it keeps going up. By 3 hours from now, we might even get that 150. Okay, so they fired their special teams coordinator. That's the most obvious move in the history of football, right, Jake?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, you look at any metric, and it's just abysmal. I think they finished. They had like a negative 65 or something EPA on special teams.
What does that mean?
So expected points added.
I don't even know how you get it on special teams. How do you get that many points lost on special teams?
Well, for kicks makes the most sense, but there's also like field position. There's other stuff that goes into it. And the Ravens were second worst, and it was a 25-point gap to the Ravens. So when that happens, you lose your job.
Yes.
That's the short and long of it. Yeah. And when your young kicker comes back from a high ankle sprain and looks like he's lost all confidence in himself. So tough one.
Now, it isn't tough. Your entire job as a special teams coordinator is to make the most out of what you have. The 49ers didn't have a lot to work with. We got to be clear about that. But they did invest some money and some draft capital in special teams guys, right? Let's not pretend George Odom wasn't paid $5 million this past offseason to be their special teams ace.
Remember when we thought they were like ahead of the curve and we were like, are they making these special teams moves, you know, to be proactive about the new move that's coming to play?
Yeah. We were wrong, much like we were wrong about the Tennessee Titans. Though they are even more wrong. Can we just quickly aside, because this is something that really bothers us. We're right so often, Jake, that when we're wrong, it feels funny. And I got to get out ahead of this. Rand Carthen was not the issue in Tennessee. The Titans were the worst team in the history of the NFL against the spread. The worst team in the history of the National Football League. Going back to like the 78 Buccaneers, one of the worst teams of all time. So, if Vegas, who has a lot riding on getting these peg points right on if your team is good or not, if they consistently think that your team is better than it performs, is that a talent issue or a coaching issue?
They got the worst year like of L'Jarius Sneed's career. Like, is that poor, you know, roster management, or is that coaching, or should they, maybe that is poor on the GM, but they put a lot of like good pieces, decent pieces.
I like their D-line
on that team.
I like their secondary. I like their receiving core. I mean,
they were in quite a few games.
And by the way, it was somewhat of a rhetorical question. It's entirely on coaching. You know who the best coaches in the NFL are? And I'll hold to this with Kyle as well. The guys who consistently beat the spread. Mike Tomlin as an underdog, unbelievable. Can't get enough of him. Always bet him as an underdog. Patrick Mahomes, not so great when a super favorite, but if you have a close favorite, Andy Reid, him and them, easily clears it every time. They're great against the spread. Guys who are great coming off of a bye week, guys who are great against the spread, that's an easy quantifiable metric of great coaching. I really believe that. Now you have to have a large enough sample size. And maybe they don't have that with Callahan yet. By the way, this is now a Tennessee Titans podcast. We want to get that number one pick analysis in so badly. But it kind of a win for the Niners in that I think Rand could come back. There was some talk about maybe him getting back with the Niners immediately, even beforehand, even before this went down. that he might pull like a Calipari or a kind of, you know how in college basketball the coaches leave for another job that's lesser than before they get fired? Like there was some
getting out ahead of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's Frank Haith going to Tulsa instead of getting fired by Missouri.
Now we're talking.
Now we're into it. Also a Tulsa Golden Hurricane podcast. Can't believe that's their name. Regardless.
Also Western Kentucky too. Anyway.
Hey now. So there was some talk that he might just come back in to the fold.
Right.
We've talked a lot about all the moves that they need to make with the roster. We're going to have hours and hours of content on that. The stuff that doesn't get talked about a tremendous amount, but is not as important, but certainly important. It's not even the coaching stuff, which we'll get into, right? Those are, you know, front-facing people. It's the guys behind the scenes, the and gals behind the scenes that help build up the roster, that give John Lynch the support system. And I do think that we need to be forthright about this going into the offseason. This is John Lynch's team now. Like, John handles a lot of the sort of administrative stuff that Kyle should be handling as a head coach. He is very hands-on as a GM. I got no problem with that. That's the delineation of power. It's always been that way. But Kyle has given up more and more of that sort of contractual responsibility he originally gained by coming in, saying, I want full power. I want the full Belichick. He's given up more and more of that to John over the years in small ways and in big ways. And John, just as much as Kyle, needs to get a better infrastructure of brainiacs around him. He needs smarter, more competent people.
They've almost reached the point where they got all these guys hired away, and now it's like circling back where some of them might be able to come back into the building depending on how these cycles play out.
Right. You look at some of the coaching hire, you know, Robert Saleh is a great example. It's like, oh, is Robert Saleh going to come back? I don't think he will on the basis of he needs to prove that he can do it somewhere other than San Francisco. And probably maybe even sticks on the offensive side of the ball for a year or two. But I am of the mindset that the 49ers need to make, you know, serious additions to obviously the roster, obviously the coaching staff, but just as much, and we'll keep an eye on it. It's not like, you know, these are things that are easily reported, so it's on us, but people behind the scenes. And
I mean, it matters. There's just a level of intelligence and being intelligent in different ways. Like there's often that misconception that like a smart person is a smart person. It's like, you know how like everybody has like a dumb friend who's like one excellent student, you know, they end up becoming really right. They end up becoming really wealthy because their profession is specialized in an area, but you talk to them and they're dumb. I'm not suggesting this is the case, but there are people that are specialized in certain areas and do have expertise in ways that like, you need that perspective in the building. They might understand a position better, right?
Yes.
And just having those perspectives, it's like, it's sort of like how, you know, people misunderstand like the whole Moneyball thing. Like the Moneyball, really the takeaway was like having different ways of solving a problem, being open to new approaches. Mm-hmm. And when you have different perspectives in who have different areas of expertise, that can do nothing but help you as long as you have leadership at the top that does listen to those perspectives. And when it's someone you trust, they listen to them.
Certainly the 49ers are in no position to be pushing an ideology at this juncture. I think that there needs to be an openness towards new concepts. They have drafted abysmally, save for this past year. A good question for whenever John and Kyle want to talk. What was different about the draft process going into 24 as opposed to the prior 3 years when you came out with one good player?
Yeah, it's my main question, and it's sort of an overarching one, and I'll probably get one attempt to ask it in a way that doesn't get the answer I want, because
never.
That's what happens in these things. You get 20 minutes, and everybody has a question, and everyone has a column they're trying to get to, and you go, well, I just want to ask, I think the way I'd like to ask it is at least with the offensive line.
You can't even ask me.
The offensive line one. The offensive line one. Dieter, cough it out. Let me go ISO here. The number one thing is like the offensive line.
Standing in the corner. If you need to pass me the ball, I'll just be over here in the corner.
Like Chris Foerster talked about the offensive line, and they're basically like, all right, first two rounds, we generally try and get skill position players. We think we can develop guys in the third and fourth round. Do they think they need to reevaluate that? Not do they need to come to a different conclusion, But is that something they need to reevaluate? And do they need to reevaluate their philosophy? And they'll probably say, well, we had a really great draft and we got Pooney. So that's, you know, probably not the one to ask. But like they in general, I think I'm curious if they are open to like a true reevaluation of how they do everything. And I think they do, for the most part, take the end of the year. And when all the coaches get assignments, they go, all right, what worked, what didn't. But I wonder if they can go deeper on that this year and challenge themselves even more to go to the core of their scheme, to the core of how they're trying to attack defenses, to the core of their own defense. I think that fundamentally, and maybe they come to the same conclusion that what they're running works.
Yeah,
with a few new wrinkles.
It's not. But I'm just curious the children who are at fault.
I'm just curious how deep they go on that.
Well, that's an interesting point, because I do think that they're using the extra time to evaluate things like that, maybe more than they've had an opportunity to in the past. And the calendar doesn't provide obvious junctures for deep thinking and fundamental reevaluation, right? Like, free agency is going to be here end of February, March. Okay, so that's the end of the season. You get like 2 weeks, right, before free agency's there after a Super Bowl. And then the draft. And that's going to be all-encompassing. So can you evaluate between now and whenever free agency starts? Because when you're drafting players, you need them to fit into what it is you're doing. You don't want to end up like Atlanta, yep, where they're like, actually, we're going to get Kirk Cousins, and then Michael Penix is there, and they're like, yeah, so about that Cousins thing that we did. I guess we'll see it through. And it's worked out until the dead cap hit comes next year. But like,
and right, and they would have made the playoffs this year if they just...
Who could have seen that coming? Regardless.
L. That's an L. Question, L.
My question now is, do you fire Sorensen knowing that you need to reevaluate a lot of the things that you do, and it's going to take some deep thinking, and right, as you were saying, getting with the coaches, what's working, what's not working, having this sort of debrief? Do you want to be hiring a new defensive coordinator under those circumstances? Because this is it should be a rare opportunity for you.
I think the question for me, when you go to a defensive coordinator and you make a change, is you look at the market and you say, who can we get that speaks the same language we do, that we're confident? Not, and by the same language, I don't necessarily mean the same terminology, the same exact system, scheme.
They have the same, right, beliefs, same they religion, football religion.
They can talk, yeah, the same language. They are able to have conversations and sort of diagnose issues, and they have flexibility. And I think if you look at like Jeff Ulbrich, the guy that I think they want, you said
that
it, they
won the last.
I think that's something that they'll strongly consider, is like, does Sorensen have the wherewithal to look in and evaluate? And is he that like high level guy that, okay, yeah, he's been in the system, he understands how they run things, but can he actually evolve the scheme or change the scheme? And there wasn't really evidence of that. I don't know how much leeway he was given with that, but if they don't believe that they can have those like high level conversations and reevaluations with him, then he's not the guy. And yeah, that's kind of what it comes down to. You have to be moving this entire defense in a fundamentally, you know, uplifting way.
Yeah. Who got better? Who got better on this defense? Whose play appreciably was better? Like, you could say, oh, Renardo Green got better, but he was a rookie.
You can't count rookies, right?
That's what I'm saying. So who got better being in Sorensen's defense?
Maybe Yetur Gross-Matos.
Maybe that's about as fair as you could be. Maybe Kalia Davis had a better year in all 45 of his snaps, and he didn't.
Bosa
have
wasn't
year.
Better. Warner wasn't better. Jair Brown was monumentally worse.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Charvarius Ward had a, we off the field.
Charvarius stuff. Ward thing is separate, and we'll get into the locker room of yesterday.
Yeah, I do want to. Yeah,
because there's some interesting stuff to be gleaned from that. But my goodness, the Jair Brown thing. His last, if there was justice in how he, it won't happen this way. He'll get opportunities, but it would be fitting. It would be fitting if his final play as a 49er was one-on-one, fourth string running back, swing and a miss, 46-yard touchdown.
What Trey McBride did to him is going to be really hard.
Trey McBride was doing it to Fred Warner all game.
Yeah.
He stood no chance.
But the hurdle's like a tough, it's even maybe worse than the Mahomes one that Mustafa had this year. But like beyond that, and I think we talked about it. He's a smart guy. You talk to him, he's a really smart guy. He's got some of the physical traits you like. It's like, is he overthinking? Because you saw in the preseason, there's a couple times where he shoots his gap and you go, oh, where's that been?
Right.
And then, I don't know. He's gotten clearly worse. And I really like
every game.
The dude, but it's not happening.
I can't imagine that it will. Like, this feels fundamental. It's almost Pajemski-like. His intelligence and physical qualities got him to a certain point very fast. Because you can make the argument he's gotten worse every game that he's played in the NFL. It's been brutal. It's season and a half. He comes in, he gets an interception his first game, Tampa Bay, and it's kind of just to the point where they bench him for the playoffs, and then they bring him back in for the Super Bowl, and he's not good there, though it wasn't his fault. Like, you can't put it on Jair Brown. Comes back this season, actually had a decent enough game against the Jets. It seemed as if the entire 49ers did in retrospect. And then the real season started, and it was just like, oh, no, this has gone horribly wrong. His runs against the Bills were the worst I've ever seen.
I'd like to think that when I left for Japan, there was like a timeline split. And then there was the 49ers, I had not gone to Japan. And then, I'm not saying I influenced their season. I'm saying I created two timelines.
Goes without saying. Shout out to Counterpart, Justin Marks, great TV show. You really actually legitimately, if you can find it anywhere, watch it. Legitimately great television show. The guy who did Shogun, that was his first show.
Oh yeah.
10 out of 10, no notes, one of my favorite shows of all time. One of the classics of modern television. But Jair Brown right now is going, I'll give this to whomever the new special teams coordinator is going to be. You're going to get a lot of Jair Brown. Because he'll be on the roster because he's
cheap. I know they need safety is suddenly like that's a priority. That is something they need to figure out. And they looked at it. I remember they looked at it last cycle and then they just sort of held off. And I think it was there's price point, but you look at some of the guys, like they could have got Cam Curl. You know, they could have got a few different guys and they held off.
What a name for a cover three safety, Cam Curl.
Yeah,
how great would that have been? Like, what do you do? Well, I cover the curl. What's your name? Cam Curl. I ain't.
It's great.
Buy into the system here. You guys want to be a cover three team and there's a safety named Cam Curl available to you? Like, nominative determinism has to mean something in this world.
Regardless. Yeah. I think when you look at the positions, like, there's a lot that I think the draft is a spot. You can name almost every position. We'll get into that. But, like, safety and interior offensive line or spots where I'm like, those might be your free agency plays.
Interesting. Because of cost. But interior offensive line is no longer. Do you think that was a 1-year blip where they were giving guards $20 million a year?
We'll find out.
Trey Smith gets to set the market. Did you see? He had a block the other day against the.
He's awesome.
He's incredible.
And he's going to get to play into the playoffs when everyone's watching the games. And so you're going to get Chris Collinsworth going, oh, my God, Mike, this guy is just incredible.
He had bad blood. He's got bad blood there. Travis Kelce knows something about
that. He plays like he wants. I just did a Gruden. Oh,
everything
man.
Turns into Gruden because Gruden's the ultimate analyst.
God, he
sacrificed himself awesome. For the sins of others.
This guy, man.
Let me tell you something about this guy, man. got me feeling real nicey. It's unhinged.
Some people hated on that. I loved it.
You have to understand Gruden. I have a photo, by the way, of John Gruden, Ron Jaworski, and Obi, the Orange Bowl mascot, which is a giant orange, all in the tunnel at the Orange Bowl. For some reason, I should frame it. I should absolutely
you need to frame it.
I've never done this in any other circumstance, but they were all walking down the hallway at roughly the same time. And I had spent a little bit of time with both of them. They were calling the Orange Bowl for ESPN. And that was like the Monday Night Football crew, and they put them on the Orange Bowl for some reason. And I had spent a bunch of time with them because I was in South Florida. I was covering the Orange Bowl. So, like, I got, like, confirmation on the Tom Moore, we don't practice fucked line. And, like, it was great. It was incredible. And they were, like, super nice dudes. Loved chatting it up. Like, I learned a lot about football just being in their presence. I just was on them like a leech, and they didn't say anything. So, like, I'm just going to keep doing this. So they're walking down the hallways. I give them a how you doing. They're like, hey. And I go, we got to get a photo. And they're like, oh, of us? And I go, no, of him. And it was the Orange Bowl mascot. And Gruden's like, that's a great idea, man.
But so that's fucking incredible. I need you to send me this photo after.
Well, then the flip side is all these photographers started to come and take the photo too, like the professional photographers, because we were in the tunnel right outside. And so all these photographers were like walking to the photo room. So I get like pushed to the side and they're cheesing it up. It was incredible.
That's awesome.
Nicest dudes. Go.
I went to a Philadelphia Union soccer game. That's like, I don't know if you've ever been.
Kevin Durant.
They're basically under a bridge.
They're under a bridge in Delaware. No, New Jersey.
Yeah. No. It's in Delaware. In Delaware. And Jaws was there. He was like the guest of honor. And they all have these flares, and he's like holding up a flare. It was so bizarre. It was incredible.
Kevin Durant owns part of that soccer team.
They're fun. They had Brendan Aaronson on the team. I'm moving on.
This is now Philadelphia Union MLS.
How many teams from different sports can we cover?
Ridiculous. Jair. Did you say the Chicago Steel?
Yes.
Of the USHL.
That's right. Junior league. We're trying to go minor leagues.
That's where Macklin Celebrini played a year. They play out in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, at the used to be the Sears Arena. Now it's the Dickies Arena. Who's to say? Let's pull this thing back on whatever rails it once had.
Yeah, we're back to the 49ers, folks. Don't leave us.
Jair Brown. Not out, because you'll find some role for him, but he can't start for you next year. Mustafa's going to start. I'm pretty sure that Gibson is done.
Yeah.
It was a tough scene. I don't expect anything from him.
I took like little notes because I'm setting up, you know, just an end of season positions of need, like going position by position. I'm like, it's a position of, like, as I said, position of need. Like, you could bring Hufanga back if it's $2 million, but he doesn't play coverage for you. Like, he's a box linebacker who could help you in the run game, and it's not bad having him around. Mm-hmm. He's not a massive liability, but he is a liability, and you don't want to pay
special teamers. He was a great special teamer.
Don't want to pay a premium for him.
You could pay him George Odom money.
Right. Mustafa's the only guy you can count on. I would say you target, if you can't find a safety in free agency you like that's at a reasonable price point, and you might not even want to go that route, I think you look again like third, fourth round, because they've got an extra fourth rounder coming in from Chase Young.
I think you need to draft one. Not early.
I do too.
But unless you see one you really like the kid out of Georgia, Sparks, is unbelievable. And if he's sitting there, Bubba? I don't know what Bubba Sparks. Yeah, I don't know if you take a safety at 11, but like maybe you do. There are three. You know, there are two positions that we can make: the offensive line, defensive tackle, maybe just defensive line in general. Like, you have to get somebody in the first round there. But and we'll get into it. Like, this is what we'll do for the next couple of months. But like, if there is a separation point of Sparks, who I'm pretty sure is the number one safety on everyone's board, if the next best guy, kind of like last year, doesn't go until the third round, like this was with linebacker, it was Edger and Cooper, and then like the next guy was fourth round. And so if there's that kind of gap again, just being practical, you might have to take him there and then hope that the depth plays itself out. So
game theory. I'm looking at that 11 spot. Like, that might be a prime spot to pick up another pick. We'll have to see how it plays out. There's months and months to figure out how that plays out. But there's always going to be, you know, there's going to be Shador and Cam Ward and maybe like a third guy to jump up in that top three with quarterbacks. And that pushes all the rest of the talent down. I just think the 49ers might be in a spot where they can say, all right, we'll drop to like 14 or something, and then we go and get a third round pick because you just want to take as many bites of this apple as you can.
Yes, because they're not an organization. I don't think there is an organization that can make the argument that they're really, really good at this. Maybe the Rams can. What have they done? Practically speaking, they have tried to get as many bites as the apple as possible, limit the exposure on high draft picks so that they look really, really smart. That's good GMing. Real deal sports here. I like Andrew.
It's Starks, not Sparks, by the way.
Starks. I'm just going to call him Bubba
Malachi
Starks.
Malachi Starks.
Mukuba from Texas. I've texted you about this kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This dude is a walking targeting penalty. I love him. Can't get enough of him. And I'm not sure if he fits for the 49ers. And again, we'll have to break him down. I'm not sure if he fits for the 49ers because him and Mustafa might be too much. There might be too much aggression on the defensive side. That said, one of the concerns.
Here's the thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you get another guy next to Mustafa and you get another sort of corner that's physical, all of a sudden, like, you've got a sick young secondary that's violent. Like, Renardo Green is, like, I wouldn't say he's not going to have hell out of guys, but, like, PBUs, like, he's an incredibly good tackler. Like, he's not afraid of anyone. We know what Diamador Lenore is. Like, if you can add a little bit of grit to that secondary,
yeah,
I just think they need physicality and speed.
This is the issue, right? This is the issue when we get to Hufanga. Are they going to be willing to walk away from the physicality? Are they willing to walk away from cover three? Like, that's a real tell. If we get word, or if it comes to our way, that they're willing to walk away from Mustafa, from Hufanga, like, that's, it'd be terrifying if they were walking away from Mustafa. But if they walk away from Hufanga, that says something about where this team is going, because it does sound like, or at least there's an indication. I don't know how much credence I put in Wag's Instagram accounts, but there's some, at least Dre right. Greenlaw thinks that he's leaving, which makes some sense. I would say that there's nothing certain about that, but they don't have an agreement in place. I know that for certain. I thought that there might be. I was told flatly no. Clearly, Dre yep. Greenlaw hasn't told anybody about it. And then I think that's just a just in case sort of a thing. But the price is going to have to be right for the Niners. And I'm sure Greenlaw, having faced the end of his career head first, is not going to be too keen to take a discount, because why would you? Get as much money as you can now. It's probably your last NFL contract of any worth,
yep.
if you can even get that. So we'll see. That market's
going to be tricky. I do think, yeah, his market's interesting. I could see him getting anywhere from, I think his base will be four. Like, the floor for him is probably $4 million. I'd have a hard time seeing somebody giving him more than eight. I feel like it's in $4 to $8 million range, 2-year deal wherever he goes.
Yeah, and we'll.
But
we'll
if see. it's eight, he's probably not coming back. If it's five, they paid Campbell five. So,
right. I'll note this. So, Tommy Huxley, why the hate on Winters? He was way better than Campbell with more speed. He certainly had more speed. Didn't know what he was doing. Right, he was the opposite of Devondre Campbell. As Jake so eloquently put it, Devondre Campbell saw the game in slow motion, played the game in slow motion. D. Winters plays the game at lightning speed, but the game is going lightning speed for D. Winters. Now, one of those two things can change, but the more he played, the worse it got. I would make the argument counter to that with Campbell. It was starting to actually look respectable to a degree with Campbell later yeah. on. So
before he did the whole thing,
quitting on his football team. Yeah. So you cannot under any circumstances go in with him penciled in as anything other than a backup at weak side line.
Also, he gets injured every single game. That's just a fact. Like was there one game that he didn't either go in or come out with an injury?
Yeah.
It's like, right. It's like he's trying to be Greenlaw, but like he doesn't have the physicality or the same IQ to do it. He's got some really hard hits, some impressive plays, but it's way more whiff than hit.
It's just not viable as an option for a defense of somebody who is trying to be competitive next year. Real quick before we get into some of the other stuff here, Brian Griese did the Jets. Listen, Brian Griese's getting a lot of buzz for offensive coordinator jobs. I don't think he'll be a head coach, but
yeah, I also the Jets. I feel like the Jets have interviewed 15 people for their head coaching job.
You mean the 15-year-old who runs the Jets has interviewed 15 people?
They interviewed, I think, Louis Riddick, the guy from the Senior Bowl, Jim Nagy. That guy's so goddamn annoying. I'll say that.
Those
are for the GM jobs. They're interviewing. I mean, someone was like complimentary of like their process, and I'm like, this is like just because you interview 15 people. Like, you're giving yourself a wide berth, right? That's better. You can get different perspectives. But at a certain point, you're like, I don't really remember what any of them said, and I don't know what we're looking for. I guess you just see if anyone blows you out of the water, but I don't have any faith in them.
I don't think so. Okay, a little bit of backlash here on the Winters thing. D. Winters is not a rookie. Might have been his first go-around, but he's not a rookie. And
Bethune did look okay.
Yeah, yeah. Bethune might be our best linebacker. Bethune made a couple of plays against Arizona. He's not not a good special teams player, which is somewhat telling. Even though they keep putting him out there because they really just didn't have
not like an elite athlete either, which is worrying.
I did enjoy the carnal yells every time he made a tackle, though. Curtis Robinson can continue his ascent. He was flashing big time in the preseason. Curtis Robinson is a preseason player. He's not flashing. There are levels to this.
He's also coming off, but he also tore his, I think, ACL.
He ain't it. He doesn't. He might have the smarts. He does not have the requisite athleticism to play linebacker at the NFL level. Maybe 10 years ago, but not anymore. I think you keep Curtis Robinson around.
Yeah.
He's certainly a good person to have on a football team. You could do way worse with the guy that is last on your roster, but that's all he is.
I think we got a super chat at the top.
Yeah, let's hit it. If Purdy and 49er disagree, Brock hold it or play 1-0. thank you, Cam's dad.
Thank you, Cam's dad.
I think Cam might have written this. I'm presuming Cam is
dead. I would, if I was Brock, I would, you know, I think you, do you show up? Would you show up if you're Brock? To OTAs and minicamp?
Yeah. I think that
Brock I wouldn't show up to training camp.
First off, I fully expect my takeaway listening to Brock talk about it yesterday, and he was fairly candid, was that he's not going to be someone who's driving a crazy hard bargain. If he'll come in reasonable and he expects the 49ers to come in reasonable. I think that there's easy middle ground. I think that this has a lot. I think this is going to be a lot closer to the Christian McCaffrey situation than it is to the Brandon Ayuk situation.
He did explicitly say it felt like a shot at Ayuk. It wasn't, because that's not how he operates, but it was, he was like, I would like to avoid any drama or, you know, unprofessionalism and keep this thing, you know, kosher.
There is a value aspect of this in place. Brandon Ayuk was very much in this. He's totally entitled to doing this. Very much about external respect. How much money can I get? What does that mean? I have never once gotten that vibe off of Brock Purdy, but I had never once gotten the prior vibe off of Brandon Ayuk. And stuff changes when the circumstances change.
Receivers are also different, especially because Ayuk didn't get a lot of credit at all. Right. Also, Warner joking sort of to that end, being like, yeah, Brock's going to go get a bunch of chains. I kind of think he should copy Kirk Cousins and just come in the offseason with like an absurd chain.
That'd be
it's a sponsored tractor.
That's right. It would have to be sponsored. And listen, Brock's going to go make himself a lot of money at the Super Bowl in terms of all those media hits and stuff.
Super Bowl? Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, media row.
The media row.
Brock's it's going to get asked a million times over. It wouldn't shock me in the least bit if they had a deal done before that.
I don't think it gets to there, but if I'm him, I'm not playing on a $1 million contract.
No, I don't think he will. And again, I am not going to predict such a thing. There's a lot of people out there right now who are going to do the full extrapolation. I got to go with my gut here. Like, I don't think it gets anywhere close to being a problem.
I mean, they saw the other side of that this offseason. It was like the entire season was dead from the start.
I don't even think that it's going to be the Niners learning the lessons of the past. I just think that Brock's going to go in and say 55, and the Niners are going to be like, great, done. And they're,
even though, it'll be, hey, give me basically $35 million in cap hits for the first 4 years, and most of that's guaranteed. And then you just copy the Jordan Love contract.
Exactly. I mean, even more so, just Jordan Love with more guarantees. And if I'm Brock, I say, I'm looking for term. Right. If the 49ers want you to go short, that's great. More guarantees, more money. If I'm Brock, I mean, I've been in a situation like this, obviously for the same amount of money. But like back when I worked at Fox Sports, and no, I wasn't featured in any lawsuits recently. They came to us and it's like, okay, we're doing contracts. And I'm like, I want term. This place is a cesspool. I want term. And I'm going to make sure that you pay me for 3-4 years. As opposed to taking a 1 year at more money. So I want term because this place is a little on edge. If I'm Brock Purdy, I want term because he's been injured every year. And Jake, I'm not going to lie to you. Standing next to him for about 30 minutes yesterday, pretty tough argument to give that man $55, $60 million.
Because of how large he is?
The quite opposite. Because he looked small. And it's a lot different at the dais. It's a lot different when you're just talking to a guy one-on-one when he was surrounded by sports writers and he didn't stand out as a football player. And Fred Warner.
Is this your first time seeing him in a scrum?
No. Well, kind of. I mean, he rarely does scrums. And usually he's in a locker area. And there's a little standing in that one spot as he did yesterday for like 40 minutes because he's a pro. And I really appreciate how much the Niners were pros yesterday. Obviously, no one was coming for throats or anything, but they're like, I'm here. I'm a professional. Yeah. Like, good leadership. Like, you want to talk about, you know, the shitty situations with other teams? That's the day where you do all the finger pointing. Oh, you know.
Yeah, you didn't have a Tyreek Hill saying, I'm out of here.
I'm out of here. Any of this. So the whole point is, it's tough to, when you have Brock Purdy, who is currently dealing with an elbow injury, who had
not really.
Did he play week 18?
He's not really dealing with an elbow injury.
Well, another injury.
But it is an injury. It is an injury.
Had an injury in season that forced him to miss in Green Bay. Like, his career has been maybe not defined by injuries, but it's a portion of the story of Brock Purdy's career. And then you look at him and you go, he is not very big, is he?
And the nature of the 49ers protections, and it's like, all right, someone's going to murder you, throw the ball hot, and you're not that large, that adds up.
And listen, that goes both ways, right? The fact that he's survived this long gives credence to his argument of like, let's get paid. But if I'm him, I'm looking for term.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about the locker room yesterday?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Brock was great. Kittle was great. Christian McCaffrey, who doesn't like talking to us, but he was a pro's pro.
He did bristle a little bit. There was
a smidge.
I noticed a smidge of, like, he's a guy that puts as much into caring for his body as anybody, like, quite literally, probably more than anyone.
Yeah.
And there was like people kept asking him, like, you know, overworking. Do you have to like look at how you run your offseason program? Do you have to reevaluate stuff? By the third one, he was like, I did the same thing as when I was the offensive player of the year. Yeah. So, and it's not how he said it.
It was almost exactly how he said it. Like, there was like, I didn't do anything different. I didn't overwork myself. And he was just one step away from saying the truth, which is sometimes you get old and your body falls apart. I play professional football for a living, but he couldn't get to that part. And that's the real issue.
Yeah. He did point to the optimistic part of the thing is that, hey, we don't have to play any games. Everyone's aging and we get time off. So that's positive.
And listen, you're some stuck with it one way or another.
Some people taking a little bit too much time off.
I mean, Yeah. There is, with Garendo's situation, it sounds like his ACL is fine, so that's good news, but like some serious concerns there.
Yeah, when I'm looking at the roster, I'm looking at Debo as a running back. If you're keeping Debo next year, like I'm using Debo as like a power back because it's your last year with
he's
him as a
contract. Patrick Taylor.
He's your power back and he's your rotational fourth receiver.
Yeah.
That's how I would honestly handle it and call that blasphemous. And there's times where you want him out more where he's like looking good and you're getting zone. Against zone heavy teams, I'm going to want him out there more because he can still be explosive.
But you got to know your matchups,
and you don't know what Ayuk's going to be. So
he's a gadget player. You have to use him a lot. Well, not you have to use him as infrequently as Juwan Jennings was used prior to this season. Right, third down guy, situational guy. He is a gadget player now, kick returner.
Yeah.
Okay. It is what it is.
Yeah.
He was pro yesterday too.
Yeah. I missed his scrum, but
yeah, it was interesting. I can't get over the tracks.
Yeah,
I can't do it.
Yeah,
and then he said he wasn't going to start working out until the Super Bowl, and I'm like, I'm just running the numbers here. I don't know if that's going to be enough time. He had to put on 40 pounds in season, Jake.
That's not accurate.
Okay. Well, that's kind of.
I'm not going to speculate on that. Okay. The other thing I picked up from the locker room is just the reality of like how bleak it was, how tragic this season literally was, in the sense of like Chris Foerster's wife died.
Yes.
Like Ricky Pearsall got shot.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Trent Williams had a child die, and then Charvarius Ward talked for the first time about like his 1 year old child dying.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I mean, if the money's right, I come back to the 49ers and I played so poorly that could happen. But he's like, Ward literally said he was so traumatized that like coming back to California, like his wife won't come back to California because it's too traumatic.
Understandably. They're in Dallas.
Yeah.
That's the last time we'll see Charvarius Ward at that stadium, or at least in the home locker room of that stadium.
Yeah, I would expect. That was what I got from talking to him. Also talked to Pearsall, who like is just clearly feeling better about his body, clearly feeling better where he's at. He also like he heard the criticism, like people ripping him, like not that he sought it out, but he heard it, which is unavoidable. So I feel like that ending the season on that note helps his confidence. And he also said like, he's going to have to like talk to some people. Like, you know, I don't think anyone forgot what happened to him, but like once you start getting the season and he's out there every week and he's starting to play more and more, it didn't feel like there was the, cause it's hard to be like, oh, well, this guy's dealing with trauma.
It. You have to overwrite it's like, that narrative. Yeah.
How are you supposed to like equate, oh, how much do I give him slack for, like, it's an impossible thing to wrap your head around, but he was honest that like, yeah, he's replaying that moment in his head. So there's like a lot of shit behind the scenes that went on this season. That is not an excuse for like how things went, but like pretty
kind of is
brutally. It's not a non-factor. It's clearly a factor. And my thing is there's so many things that went wrong that to like just put it on that or just put it on injuries. It was a pretty brutal year for them physically, emotionally, in every, just about every facet.
Okay. Some folks in the chat are having a conversation about Kirk Cousins versus Brock Purdy.
Kirko Chains.
I would just highly recommend to everyone out there, please watch the final games that Kirk Cousins played for the Atlanta Falcons and then come on back.
If you get him for, what would you pay Kirk?
It'd be whatever the Russell Wilson contract is, right? Like $1 million. But Brock Purdy's better at $1 million. And frankly, how about this? Think about the teams that have a quarterback issue, and then think about how much they would pay to not have the quarterback issue.
Yep.
So the idea that, oh, go get Kirk Cousins. You're trying to moneyball this. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. I'm strictly talking about Kirk as a backup. Like, how much would you pay?
I'm down with Kirk as a backup because that puts some pressure on Brock. I'm not sure that Kirk would want that. I think that would be his last resort to be a backup somewhere.
Yeah. Lord knows he goes for the bag, so.
Well, too late now. the bag has been procured many times before, and now he's got to get his ass back into a position where he can make another bag. Yeah. I don't know.
I will say that the point of like him coming off an Achilles tear, like if you want to do another season of rehab and you get with Kyle Shanahan, you saw what it did for Sam Darnold. Put him in a good
situation.
What did
it do for Sam Darnold? It got him another job that he was going to be the backup for, and then it all worked out for him. I mean, Kirk Cousins should go to another spot like Atlanta, but in reverse, where they think that the rookie's going to be the starter, and then they got to bring in Kirk. Coming off a serious Achilles injury, unlike you, I don't necessarily think this season spells the end of Cousins' career. Cousins' career as what? As a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback? I mean, he was awesome for Minnesota. Awesome before he tore his Achilles. He was awful. Absolutely awful. Not parsing anything. The interceptions were that of somebody who could not throw at even 70% of his former velocity. Someone who could not move around in the pocket. Okay, you want to bring him in as a backup? Give him a shot to figure it all out? Fantastic. No problem with that whatsoever. Best case scenario, he's the old Kirk Cousins again. And now you get to do this little thing. Trade him, whatever. The worst case scenario is you overthink this thing, and they won't do this, so it's not even maybe worth entertaining, but let's just entertain it. You want to moneyball this and say, oh, well, we can save $30 million against the cap next year by bringing in Kirk Cousins, and he'll be better than Brock. And then he goes out there, and he's the same Kirk Cousins. And meanwhile, Brock is...
And you'll win seven games.
He won't win seven games. Not the Kirk Cousins I saw at the end of the season. That guy's unplayable. That guy was worse than Deshaun Watson at the end of the season. Legitimate. And Deshaun Watson's put in one of the worst seasons I've ever seen. Aaron Rodgers, same thing. Aaron Rodgers had such good counting. Yeah, because they were behind in every game because they couldn't do anything. Completely exploded what was ever
Remember
left.
Remember when the Jets were like a Super Bowl favorite?
Like yeah, well, you know, the Cowboys are a Super Bowl favorite every year. Aaron Rodgers is out there running the Tua offense with, I guess it was nice once they got Devondre Adams and stuff, but like Devontae Adams, but betting?
Yeah.
It's such an obvious mistake to be like, hey, you know what this team needs to do? It needs to get younger and faster. We've already expunged our Super Bowl window.
Yeah.
Let's go get Kirk Cousins or Aaron Rodgers to start at quarterback and trade Brock Purdy. That's ridiculous.
I don't think you can seriously discuss having Cousins as your starting quarterback. I do think you can get him as
a fortune teller.
He
what, don't be a fortune teller? What do you think we do here? The whole season's been about telling fortunes and nailing them. What are you talking about? 55 million.
Yeah. Brock will get paid. It will be, I think, far, far less dramatic than any of these other contract things. If you get Cousins for cheap, Kyle would obviously love that. Yeah. Just from a mentorship perspective, I do think there is like an argument to be made that a year out from the Achilles thing, he will look better and will have more of a plant foot. But that's not to say I would even consider him as a starter. That's just like as a backup. Guy who's done it in this league, can let him rest up, give him some, you know, send him to Germany for some stem cell treatment.
Yeah, it works so just great like, for the other guy.
Well, it was a, I mean, I'm a saying knee injury.
He has to go full Flacco is what has to happen here. And so, yeah, here we go. I'm just telling you, first time at the channel. Welcome. This is how we do things. We tell you the future.
Dieter gets... It gets very upset about the discourse.
The discourse is fundamentally removed so often from reality, and I think higher of the audience than I think most channels do. And this was something that you and I had a discussion about when a few people started watching, where you're like, we got to be careful here because we're going to get some leak over from channels that do not respect the intelligence of the audience and have been brainwashed into this immediate news cycle bullshit.
Right.
Clickbaity bullshit, TikTok, content versus art sort of thing. And we're just not going to play that game. But when it leaks in, I get defensive about it.
Yeah. And I think the reality is like we've covered this team for, I don't know, this is my fifth year doing it. How many years for you? Six?
Ten.
That's insane.
I came in 2014. And then,
The point is, it's like, I think our goal is to just try and share our perspective and educate. And we're going to come off snarky for sure.
That's impossible to stop.
But try and be as genuine as we possibly can. And, point to the reality of like how the 49ers look at things and what the reality of players are. And the reality is like Brock Purdy's a very good football player who has limited arm strength. He's never going to be like in that elite tier, but it doesn't matter because he's better than like, you don't have an alternative really. Like he is your answer at quarterback. He has trust with Kyle Shanahan. He elevated the offense more than any other quarterback you've had. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be the $55 million thing. And it'll be more like 20 in the first year increase. Like the Jordan Love contract, it will be manageable and you can still add because the cap goes up every year. Mm-hmm. And as much as you want to money ball things, like as we talked about earlier, like
as good as it would be for the quote unquote content for this to be a thing, it's not a thing. It's not.
It's just not the position you can like go cheap at, like by design, unless you get really lucky with certain circumstances. Like the Vikings, they got like Darnold for cheap because he's been a backup and they drafted a rookie
for 1 year.
Right. For one year. And then the price goes up. 49ers got Brock for cheap. They just happened to waste their window when they should have won a Super Bowl.
Right. And they wasted it how? With free agent signings. So the idea that, if Brock takes less money, they'll be able to get more guys in free agency. Like, so what? You know, like they don't do well in that. Maybe we shouldn't give them the ammunition to go shoot themselves in the foot again, because that's all they, we'll go fix defensive tackle with a free agent signing. How's that going? I'm still waiting. They could have just given DeForest Buckner money, and instead we're still waiting for them to get a viable defensive tackle.
We'll have plenty of questions for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch whenever they talk, whether it's tomorrow or Thursday or Friday. They got to talk at some point. But we will have questions for them.
And hopefully we get them in before the banal hits us over the head. You had a breakdown of priorities for this offseason.
I'll do a quick one here. So do you want the draft round by round, or do you want position by position?
Let's do position, and then your sort of, when you say position, it's like, here's the position and here's where I think they should be at.
Here's how they should look at it. All right. Yeah. QB, keep Brandon Allen. Look at an undrafted free agent route, veteran quarterback. See if...
Keep Brandon Allen?
For $0? Yes. And look for a better veteran backup.
Okay.
And look at undrafted free agent, seventh round quarterback, that sort of thing.
Okay.
Running back. Treat Debo as a running back. So it's McCaffrey, Garendo, Debo. Try the $3 million tag with Jordan Mason. See if you can get away with that. The $5 million, that's no round. That's right of first refusal. So you give him the $3 million tag. If somebody wants to go over that, you probably let him go. Mm-hmm. That's just the reality of it. And then, you know, maybe draft another guy, sixth, seventh round. You probably need some youth in the building. That's how I'd look at it. Tight end. Extend and restructure George Kittle. Draft a tight end in like round four. Depending on, I don't trust them with the round threes at all. Listen, I'm not saying Brandon Allen's a good quarterback. I'm saying he knows the system, and you just keep him around, or Josh out. It doesn't matter. Like, whatever. I'm not excited about Brandon Allen. Let's make that clear. We're moving on. We're moving on. We're losing the plot.
Well, it felt, I mean, you kind of lost me at keeping Brandon Allen too. I think they need two or three new quarterbacks.
Okay, great. Go for that. It doesn't matter. It does. I don't. He's been in the scheme for 2 years.
A lot of good that's done him.
Oh, shut up.
Okay. Wide receiver. You're saying, no. Hold on. I want to do tight ends. Kittle here. And then you're saying early day three. That's two.
Yeah.
You're going to need two more.
Yeah. And then you just go, you can see if you get a deal on the market for a veteran. You probably need to pick up. I wouldn't keep Saubert after what I saw this year, but I would look at something in that realm, like two guys like that.
Okay.
You keep in, I guess, Willis for camp Tonjes. I don't love it, but I think like your answer is.
Are you ready for people to have a Mason Plyne discourse?
No, I'm either not. I waited to see something from him, but I didn't.
I saw him run real slow. That's what
it was.
It was
not good.
It was a plot.
Yeah. Again, I don't want Brandon Allen as a backup for this team. I'm just saying, like, you need at least four quarterbacks. Whatever. He understands the offense. Number wide receiver. Pearsall is your number one until Ayuk returns. Train him at X and Z. Mm-hmm. An ideal world is Ayuk at X, Pearsall at Z, Jennings at Y, Debo rotates. Keep Cowan, draft a fourth, sixth, seventh round wide receiver, and keep around Conley. See if you can get like an athletic veteran who's been cast asunder.
A Ray McLeod type, Darnell Mooney type.
Something like that.
Yeah, some guy who's, you know, 5'11", been in the league for 10 years.
Yeah. Benali, the only reason I say using draft capital is because sometimes you don't get to sign the undrafted free agents that you want, and they have 3 seventh-round picks that are basically the last picks of the draft.
Right.
So that's the point.
They have a lot of, this is not a nice way to put it. They have a lot of useless picks.
Yeah, they do. They do. They've got a lot of good ones. They've got 6 through pick 140 and then like 4 in the last 6. They've got a big gap between rounds 5. They have nothing in round 5 and 6.
In an ideal world, and it never works this way, they drop down, load up in the middle. I mean, because the sweet spot is 3, 4, 5, maybe even 3 and 4. Particularly, like that's the sweet spot of the draft. We're talking pick 75 to 125. I want to be in that area as much as possible.
And we'll see how the class, you know, the draft class goes. But
you also have to move up, right?
Yeah, I think moving back from 11 gives you some flexibility there, and we'll see. We'll see how it works. So that's wide receiver, offensive tackle. Offensive tackle first. Evaluate the tackle class. Consider a trade down to acquire picks and draft a tackle rounds 1 through 3.
Okay.
I really haven't looked into the draft the tackle class.
Very good. First round falls off after that is my expectation.
So maybe you don't trade down depending on who's there. We'll see.
I think you can get to the bottom of the first and still get your future left tackle.
There were a lot of guys that the 49ers just missed out on in that first round. And like Roger Rosengarten is like getting pushed around a little bit for the Ravens, but also like has been semi-productive.
Kingsley Suamatia, not going great.
Not going great. Interior offensive line. Go after Drew Dolman in free agency. He is the one center I think you should go after. He's going to be way cheaper than Trey Smith. Maybe not way cheaper, but cheaper than Trey Smith. It depends what the price tag is.
What's your AAV limit?
You want him in the 12 to 15 range.
Okay. You're willing to do it? You're willing to go to 15?
I am. I mean, we'll see how much you end up guaranteeing, but I think like a center who's been proven in this league, who's 26, like from California, a guy you kind of wanted coming out in the draft, who's been nothing but productive for the Falcons. I would want that guy. I know they've been bitten by like the Weston Richburg thing when they try to get him.
Well, they've been bitten by shitty free agent signings at every position. So
I'm just saying this would be a rare one where he's younger and coming off of his rookie contract. It's like I would look to him. Outside of that, I mean, you're not going to be able to bid on Trey Smith. I don't think. I think that price tag is going to be way too high.
Trey Smith should be a $20 million player. I would give it to him, but I'm not the 49ers. They do have an issue at left guard, though.
Yeah, and then I would say I interior offensive line, look at it every round from draft round three on.
Do you think they start a rookie at left guard next year?
They might. They very well might.
That's something. That's something right there.
It's worth considering. And then you try and, you know, you can get cheap bad guards that are veterans. like there's guards that are getting.
Can I throw? Sorry.
Yep.
Barch. What about Barch?
Barch, I would love it. Barch is definitely in consideration there.
Okay. So you bring in Barch.
He looks good.
You draft somebody. You got somebody else as a free agent. You toss him in the bag and you see which one comes out.
Yeah. Yep. That's how it
is. So Trent, Barch. Barch grab bag.
Barch, Shush,
Dahlman,
rookie, yeah.
Pooney, McKivitz, Jalen Moore,
yep. And
the other two.
That's how I'd look at it. I'd feel okay about that. I would not feel too bad about that.
Yeah. Goddamn, Ben Barch. Six quarters.
I feel good about Barch. I feel
me
really.
Too. I don't know.
He looks sick.
That's how bad this season was for the 49ers. We're like, but what about Ben Barch? And we're like, those six quarters of glory from Ben Barch? Absolutely.
Yeah,
you got to keep Moore around, by the way. I think that Moore really showed you something. And I don't think that you can expect from this point on Trent to be anything close to an Iron Man. So you should probably have his future replacement there. McKivitz, Jake, I'm going to say this one time. You were 100% right. He was their best offensive lineman this year.
He was good.
McKivitz was
really reliable.
He was solid. He was rock solid. There were games. Don't get me wrong.
I'm not saying he was outstanding. I'm just saying he was like reliably solid. You didn't have to worry about him that much.
On a list of the best offensive linemen, it was six quarters of Ben Barch and then, of course, Colton McKivitz. So, as we all predicted. So, yeah.
Cooney was pretty good. Edge. What's interesting is like, so they've got three guys. They got four.
Well,
right.
Gross-Matos, Bosa,
Floyd, and our boy Sam-O.
Oh, Sam-O. Well, Sam-O's an ERFA. I mean,
ERFA is not a free agent.
It's a thing.
It's literally not free agency. Like they get an offer that they have to accept, or they go on like a reserve retired list. I don't understand why, but that's how it works. That said, Edge, I think this is like a best player available. Like you don't try and force Edge, but if you see a guy that you're in the spot and it's a BPA, you draft it. That's how I'm looking at it. Rounds like 1-4.
Honestly, at any juncture, if you see a good one, you take it. I wish that they would treat quarterback like that, right? Because quarterback gets the inflation and then there's sort of a deflation because all the rounds three and two guys get moved up into round one because of the need. And then you're sitting there on day three and you're like, this guy's easily the best available player. You should just take him.
I mean, with you.
They're at a position where best available player should not be something to avoid. Just take it.
Yeah. And there were some guys that I liked last year that fell to like round six. Like if they've got a little speed coming off the ball and they're a project round six, like take the bite.
And let's be real here. You know, with Floyd and Gross-Matos, you have like one really good defensive end. Now you have Sam-O. He can set an edge for you. It was up and down. It was better at the start. Then it went down. Then it came up again. Then it got worse again. You know what you're getting. He's a good player. He should be on your roster. He should be someone who's in the rotation. You're not looking for somebody to be the next Nick Bosa or the guy who plays.
But you literally don't have a fifth defensive end.
You need another person for the rotation. So if they have a little spark, they got a little something, and you need 12 snaps a game, like that's great. Real quick, Nevin does point out, I think they keep Juice at fullback. What do you think?
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming, and I can't pretend that I've evaluated. Like, it's either they keep Juice or the fullback position just kind of dies.
That's correct.
They play Debo at fullback.
Hey, that's a
full. I'm not joking.
Right. That's a full cracker.
No. Well, because you need a fullback to like really block and actually do a lot of things that Debo's probably not willing to do, which is fair.
We will get into versatility versus execution as an offensive concept in the months to come. But as of right now, Kyle's still a versatility man, and a versatility man is not getting rid of Kyle Juszczyk.
Yeah, they've drafted like no good edge rushers really outside of Bosa. It's been correct. Terrible.
I mean, maybe Drake Jackson comes back and is the player that I can't even get.
Oh, my God. I forgot.
Yeah, he's still technically on the roster.
I think he's got one more year left.
Well, I don't think he's going to see it. So, yeah, and I don't know what they do with Beal, but Beal gave you nothing. And
no.
The fact that Sam Okwuanu can come in and clearly be, maybe not clearly, but can be in the conversation for second best defensive end on the team.
Yep.
Is telling, and it's not a compliment. That's not a good thing.
It's so worrying. So that's where we're at edge. Defensive tackle, number one priority.
That's right.
I have it as possibly take multiple bites at the apple here. Need to cut Javon Hargrave and rethink the position. If you go for an athlete, you also need somebody stout who's a gap plucker. You want strength, force at the point of attack, and not get washed out against double teams. You can have upside to rush the passer, but you ideally want someone who's like strength stout first.
As like you if told, you see somebody, you told me yesterday, you earn the right to rush the passer at that position.
That's how I look at it. And if you see somebody like Walter Nolan, who I think can be a better run defender, I got to watch more of him. I'm not sold.
Yeah.
Because I think he's a gap shooter who's like more in their traditional mold. Then you have to double dip. If that's how you go, you got to double dip, and you got to get a Jeremiah Ledbetter type who's just holding up. Just you need somebody like that because you have no gap integrity up the middle,
that's
and
right.
You're putting way too much on your linebackers.
Yep.
And Fred Warner, like with the injury and whatever, like he wasn't able to get downhill and fill, and he's getting attacked. And the guy next to him, when it wasn't Dre Greenlaw for those however many snaps it was, they couldn't do
400.
It. They couldn't do it.
Beyond that, I would like to note that you absolutely can get a cheap gap-plugging defensive tackle
in the market. Oh, yeah.
And, and you also have to think about, as you noted, like you're putting way too much on the linebackers. What would have happened if Fred Warner didn't play? Like, I shudder to think. What would have happened? You have to take these things into consideration.
They would have a top 10 pick.
Well, easy. Easy. I mean, they would be one of the worst teams in football. They're already a bottom third. So you need to improve at defensive end because you're not going to get all three of those right.
Nope.
And shit's going to happen at any of those three. But those three work in such concert that you end up in a situation like this year where it's just you didn't stand a chance unless the other team gave you opportunities, which smart teams won't.
I'm with you. And then at linebacker, I said it before, you try and re-sign Greenlaw. Ideally, it's like in the $4 to $6 million range for a two-year deal.
Okay.
Is that
per or total?
Per year.
Yeah, okay.
And then if you see a freak, and then I think in the draft, like you can start thinking about it in the third round. Because if you see like a linebacker who's like an actual difference maker, it's goddamn worth it. I think on principle alone, you can't draft anyone earlier than you drafted Warner.
I don't know.
I guess they did that with Kittle.
I mean,
that's not an intelligent way to look at it.
Well, it wasn't intelligent for them to take Cam Latu either. So maybe that's
upset about that, and I'll be forever upset about that.
My point is merely, linebacker is such a difficult position in the modern game to draft. And I do think you need to draft it because I think you need the young legs. You're looking for instinct. Think about what Greenlaw and Warner had in common coming in. They were both safeties that they converted.
Greenlaw wasn't a safety.
Oh, yes, he was at Arkansas.
I guess safety. Yeah, I guess safety's like a in college, safety. Depending on the defense.
He was a safety. So not as obviously as Warner was. Warner played that star position safety. Brian Urlacher, safety. Like,
yeah,
this is the you need to have. And I will say that I think in the college ranks as of late, they've moved away from the Scooby Wrights of the world and more to, you know, having raw athleticism, the Fred Warners, the Urlachers of the world. But you cannot get yourself a plotter. You need someone with explosion.
Yeah.
You need someone with a reckless abandon. You need someone who fires, because there will be unfilled gaps on that defensive line, and you need someone who goes in without thinking of the repercussions.
No question. So that's how I look at it. You try and get Greenlaw on a two-year deal. Try and get it for like 2 years, $10 million, you know, I think that's the ideal price. It's still a lot, and you're taking a risk there, but I don't know. And he might just go elsewhere. Like, he might just go elsewhere. There might be a better deal out there. I don't know how much you'd guarantee, still coming off the Achilles. There's some worry there, but you're going to have to take a bite of the apple, I think, in this draft and just say, all right, who has murder in their soul? When they get on the football field, that's how I look at linebacker. Moving it to corner, probably not going to bring back Ward. We talked about that.
No,
that's probably, you're just going to eat the dead cap money there.
So you have Green, Lenore, and now you need someone for the slot.
Lenore's your slot.
But, you know, but I do think that there's something to be discussed about the possibility of having another slot guy, because they brought in Nick McLeod when Lenore couldn't go, and clearly that didn't work. So maybe having someone at depth there would be a good option.
They kind of tried that with Chase Lucas, who didn't make the team. And
I saw Chase Lucas yesterday.
Yeah. No, I know. He's on the
practice. I forgot he was around.
Yeah. I think you try and maybe bring back Rock Ya-Sin, on a cheap deal. I think they have Luter for another year. I still don't know what Luter is. We've never seen him. But that's four. But I do think that's
specialties.
Like, corner, as good as we felt about it, like, I don't know.
No, there needs to be another body or two, for sure.
I think you look at that in the draft, and like, if you, it's the same the way I'm looking at edge, kind of. It's like, best player available. If you're in a spot where you've got a highly ranked corner, highly ranked edge, kind of whatever round it is, they're at the top of your board, you might just go for it, especially if it's like, 100%. If it's a big gap between them and the next player. That's kind of how I look at it.
They're in a position to, and this is tricky because they have so many needs, and the draft comes after free agency, right? So in the NBA, a big complaint is that the draft comes before free agency, and it's just kind of a mess. But that would almost benefit, that kind of structure would benefit the 49ers this year.
Yeah.
Because then they would know exactly what they would be doing free agency for need, and they could draft for talent. In the NFL, and this is why I think bad teams stay bad, amongst a myriad of other reasons, like, you spend all this money in free agency and then you draft for need because we didn't get this in free agency. That puts you in a really dangerous spot. Like, something, you know, credit to the Rams. They've avoided it. They have just drafted for talent again and again and again. And it's working out to a certain degree.
I'm with you. And the last spot is safety, as we mentioned before. Real position of need. You could bring back Hufanga if it's a year and $2 million, but I'm not paying more than that.
Yeah.
You've got Jair, who looked bad, and it's really just Mustafa. So that is a spot I consider interior offensive line, safety, and like kind of linebacker, if it's Greenlaw, as spots you pay in free agency.
Okay.
Kind of everywhere else. Corner maybe but it's like I'm not feeling good about that.
I don't think you pay. I think that's one of those positions where you go cheap for the time being because you've already paid one guy.
You've got two really, really solid players there. You kind of trust that you can build up depth. But yeah, I think it's center and safety or spots I'd look to maybe pay.
How do we feel about the Nuge moving forward?
I don't feel like he's the future, but I've seen nothing. He's on the roster he'll compete, but I don't think they feel like he's the answer. Or they would have given him a shot, or maybe they didn't want to let him have a shot because you kind of want to protect him. I don't know. I'd have to see. I'd like to see where he's at next time we see him.
Yeah. 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 If we get to see him again.
I mean, he's on the roster, so he'll probably be in camp.
Did he sign to anything more than?
It's the reserve future. It just means you're in camp.
Okay, good, 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 good move. Good move. Let's do a couple of them here. Get rid of Debo to pay for Greenlaw. He's that important. Can't trust either of them. And getting rid of a wide, now you have a need. Now you definitely have to get another wide receiver. Whereas I don't know how much of Greenlaw you're going to get. I can easily see the Niners moving on from this. I think in the hypothetical realm, we say, if the price is right, this feels hard to jive unless he comes back after the market says no thanks. Like that's where that stands for me. So I don't think you're making any moves to I don't think you're making any moves to keep Dre Greenlaw. I don't think you open yourself up to susceptibility like that. And yeah. with Debo, I don't see the reward of $5 million in cap space, which you would then probably immediately have to spend that or more to get. I mean, a replacement, who's to say? So,
if and Debo still is a versatile player, whatever he still is in his career, and he's going to be wanting to make some money. So,
no one's trading for him. You'd have to pay him twice as much as you would gain against the cap to cut him. You'd have to use a June 1st designation, which you might want to use for somebody, you know, another person.
You don't know what Ayuk is.
You don't know, you know. So there's, I'm of the mindset of so long as Kyle doesn't use Debo the same way next year, which is nothing we'll know until September, but so long as Debo is used correctly, which is limitedly, which means that he'll be dramatically overpaid for what he does, you eat it because you're paying him $10 million whether he plays for you or not. And if anyone deserves one blip, you know, 1 year to prove that last year was a blip in the same way that Kyle does, right? Like Kyle built it was so great. Like if that guy doesn't deserve one shitty year, like who does? Debo is of the same ilk for me. Like if that guy doesn't deserve one shitty year, who does? Now I'm not of the mindset that this is a 1 year thing.
Yeah.
But
he hasn't been great since the contract.
Agreed. But this was an exceptionally shitty year.
I would agree.
So that's where we're at.
That's a good point. Yeah, if you can get him to play zone, but they gotta have man answers to start the season, and then
100%. So that's where you're at.
Anything else?
You save $5 million after the June 1st deadline, but you're still paying $10 million dead against the cap. So is it better to just pay someone $15 million to have access to him, or pay him $10 million to go away? I know where Kyle Shanahan stands on that. Again, you're paying him twice as much as you're getting by not having him. So, anything else we want to hit?
I don't think so. We will see when John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan talk, and we will talk to you guys after that.
Yeah, we'll do it live.
And then we'll see. You know, we're going to get in draft stuff starting next week. Yep. That's our starting, and we're going to dig into it. And we might have ideally some stuff on some playoff games and CFB championship. We'll see.
I think Sunday nights will still go, and we'll talk about the games. And you know, hey, it's a 49ers another thing show. We'll talk football, and we're going to start with the spine. And does the spine now include safety? Is it running back, fullback, center?
That's the spine.
Yeah, right up the middle. Quarterback.
We'll see.
All these frou-frou guys on the outside, leave them be. We're talking big beefy boys and
that's right.
Fast mean men. The best kind of football players. I don't know. Fucking leave me alone. All right.
Time to sign off.
Yeah, ain't that the truth.
Appreciate you folks. Thank you for joining us in this afternoon. And don't forget to subscribe if you're not subscribed.
You don't have to, but it'd be great.
If you want to.
And hey, you know, because we're going to get into a schedule here, we're going to try to figure out what that is. I still think Sunday nights are pretty much locked in, but like we're on off season mode. So we might be doing these in the afternoon. So you might want to hit that bell too, if you're already subscribed, because we like doing them live. We like having the immediate feedback. We like the conversation. It's already completely off the rails, and then you just add to it. So it's, you know, it's an organic thing.
That's right.
So appreciate everybody. And we'll talk to you probably tomorrow or Thursday, whenever John and Kyle will give you some immediate reaction. God bless them. All right. Bye, guys.